Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week.
Welcome to Roguecast number 166, and I'm just going to dive right into it. June is crazy. We keep saying it. You're going to want to be in the store in June, because June 3rd, Wonder Woman Day, June 17th, Free RPG Day, June 24th, All Ages Awesomeness, June 25th through 27th, we're moving the store to Suite 330 for bigger space.
Yep.
So, a whole bunch of stuff going on in June. You can get all the details on the website. Go check that out.
And July will be our hibernation month?
Right? Probably not.
Really?
No.
Oh.
There's no hibernation month.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nick, you told me there was going to be hibernation month.
I lied.
Damn it.
All right. Bunch of news this week. I'm going to jump in no particular order. Jump in the order that I guess it got posted in our thread that we run.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We have a Facebook message where one of the three of us will post a thing that when we see something
pop culture. Every link that we see online that's notable news,
fun to talk about.
Yeah, yep. Sometimes one of us will post it and then someone else will post it.
Yep. Usually it's dumbass Randy.
Yep. This week it was Nick. That's why I pointed out this week.
I posted something that already got posted.
Yeah, but it's what I want to talk about. So, let's start with Jordan Peele producing Lovecraft Country for HBO.
Right. Is it going to be a miniseries or?
I believe it's an ongoing.
So this was based on a novel, which I have borrowed from my buddy Jose. I had forgotten that I had it till my brother was over visiting the other day, and he's like, "Oh, have you read this?" He's pointing to it in a stack of books that I've got, and I'm like, "No, I need to get around to that." And he's like, "Yeah, they're making a show out of it."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh," and that actually probably will be what gets me off my butt to finally read.
Is this what Jordan Peele chose over wanting to do Akira?
I think so, and if honestly, so, this good, is a better choice.
Well, yes. I'm sure he was like, "Oh, look at that Ghost in the Shell, and look how well it produced."
Nobody should be doing a movie. They should not be doing a movie of Akira.
I hate to say it, but except for its visual style, Akira is overrated.
What?
I actually agree with that. He's actually right. Wow, are we all in agreement on this?
Akira was one of the first manga or first anime I saw that I was really blown away by, and I still think it's visually beautiful.
Yeah, visually beautiful, and
the story doesn't make any goddamn sense.
No, right. It really doesn't.
The manga does expand on that.
The problem is, yeah, this happened a lot with anime. They made the movie well before the creator had wrapped up his manga, and so they had to sort of rush to this ending.
Yep.
It's kind of like what could happen with Game of Thrones, but probably won't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they had the talent to lock it down.
So here's the deal with Lovecraft Country. It's being it's produced by Jordan Peele, J.J. Abrams. It's a horror anthology. It will have showrunner Misha Green, who runs WGN's Underground and was a screenwriter on Heroes. Ooh, Heroes, and Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
But Underground, by all accounts, was good. Lovecraft Country tells the story of 25-year-old Atticus Black, who embarks on a road trip through 1950s America looking for his father. Accompanied by his friend Letitia and his uncle George, Atticus will face racism and evade evil spirits.
Right, I believe it. Yeah, it combines. Well, first of all, it's a rare story. Lovecraft story told from a black perspective.
Did Lovecraft have a point of view on black people? I wasn't aware of this. Any thoughts?
I don't know. You'd call it a coherent point of view, but it was definitely a racist one.
Screeching racist is what H.P. Lovecraft was. Screeching
but this is so set in like sort of Jim Crow America.
Yeah,
and interesting enough, on its own, it kind of reminds me in a way of like. I mentioned this before about like The Babadook and a few other horror movies that I've seen where, man, even before whatever supernatural horror thing shows up, these people are like in a terrible situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You said this was going to be running on HBO?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, at this point,
all signs point to good. Like,
well, at this point, I don't think HBO really makes bad television.
Yes, they do. They made Divorce with Thomas Hayden Church and Sarah Jessica Parker. And
was that outright awful?
That
though?
Was really bad.
And I mean, they made Girls, which was
really
fun.
Bad. And they made
Girls isn't really bad.
I was going to say that's your opinion of Girls.
They also made The Brink, which had a stellar cast and was, by all accounts, awful.
Okay, but they have more successes than I have. I'm just saying,
don't build them up too much, Nick. They have had big, loud failures.
And their successes are, like, huge successes.
Yes. Yeah,
like the biggest, basically, the industry has.
I'm a big old HBO whore. I just want to make sure we don't set expectations a little too high here because There was also...
Well, I think expectations are set high because of Jordan Peele's involvement. I think he's kind of coming up. I know Get Out hit on Blu-ray this week, right?
Yep, kind of want
to
rewatch
it. I would actually like to pick that up.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to as
The other
well.
Interesting thing is, I was thinking about this. I believe to date there still are... There is not... They have not made the great Lovecraft movie yet. It hasn't happened.
Del Toro wanted to.
Interesting ones. What's that?
Didn't Del Toro want to?
Del Toro wanted to. I don't think he was capable of
it. He wasn't going to be the one either.
No.
He was. He's too Del Toro.
John Carpenter came the closest, and it wasn't actually Cthulhu.
Right.
It
was... Right. But he skirted those realms, and he's done movies like, I would say, Prince of Darkness, with its weird intersection of sort of like weird quantum physics and sort of a modern-day science-based devil. That is more in Lovecraft's vein, that sort of hopelessness that shows up in his movies is Lovecraftian. So there's all these bits and pieces that have been in movies, but I don't know, never one that is overtly Lovecraftian and gets it right.
Well,
so,
by all accounts, this book is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So I'm very curious.
What's the name of the book again?
Lovecraft Country.
Okay, I might have to give this try to find this one, or just steal Dave's copy.
Jose's copy.
Yeah,
you know.
All right. We finally got the Star Trek Discovery trailer.
Right. And Star Trek Discovery's trailer seemed underwhelming to people.
I wasn't underwhelmed.
No,
I liked it.
Okay, I liked it too. I think, you know, most of the people I know on Facebook and stuff, if they're not Trekkie people, then they're movie people. They're all, and that means we're all a bunch of opinionated shits.
Yes.
So here is the one problem that I had with this, is that I felt that for the first big trailer, that it wasn't grabber enough, that it maybe needed to stake out more what the show's territory would be.
I agree with that.
But to go ahead and tell me about your reaction, Randy, and then I show up to one.
I thought it was a little too slick. It did very much feel like the Abrams Trek, but I thought the uniforms looked cool. Yep. I really like...
What's her name looks cool as the lead?
Sinequa Green. I really like her. And yeah, the lead...
People know her from... We've talked about this before, from Walking Dead.
But she's really good. I really like her. But I also thought Michelle Yeoh was really good as sort of the captain.
Over at my Trek podcast, Text Trek, we are theorizing that Michelle Yeoh... because there's another captain in it, too, that wasn't even shown in this, Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, that's
He's
right.
actually the captain of the Discovery. She's the captain of the Shenzhou, which we think is like the sister ship that... Yep. What's her name is transferring to. We don't know if they're going to be, if it is a sister ship. There's some speculation like Michelle Yeoh is going to get killed.
Here's what I think based on it. There was a little discussion there which reminded me of the Riker Picard thing. And it's a common trope where she says something about it's time for you to get your own command.
Right.
I'm thinking that she's going to transfer over to Discovery to find out that they've put a guy, a white dude, in charge of the ship.
Right.
And that,
she'll have to grudgingly accept first officer.
Yes.
In the trailer, did I see something with Vulcans? Like, is Sarek in there?
Sarek is like going to be somehow a recurring character, probably as like an advisor.
Okay.
And here's the interesting thing.
But it like
thing.
Showed him with like her as a child, right?
Right. And she had the traditional Vulcan haircut with a little...
So it's almost like she grew up
points,
on
or at
Vulcan.
Least we think it's her because the kid looks African-American. And
there aren't that many black people in Star Trek
And the kid... And you hear the voiceover who is probably... But it also could have been the lighting, but I don't think it was. You hear what sounds like Sarek's voice saying, you'll never understand, you know, you're never going to learn to speak Vulcan or something.
Like you're too human.
Because you're too human or something like that. And then it, like, flash or jump cut to her in the present, like, as if she was waking up from a nightmare. Hmm. So it seems, like, the way that was edited, it seemed very clear she was having a memory.
Well, now, wait a minute.
The notion of her growing up on Vulcan sounds kind of cool.
Well, one thing I wondered about is if that's not, like... It could be like Vulcan and like she trained there, or it could be like she had like sort of cosmopolitan parents that were like, let's take you around to a few of the great alien civilizations in your youth and you decide which one you're going to want to be a part of. Or...
Yeah, well, we don't know enough to say.
Yeah, nobody knows. It's just all speculation.
Here's the other question. Is this going to be in the Abrams Trek first? Do we know?
We know it's not.
Okay,
we know
so
it's in what
so
they
it's
would...
not Vulcan got blowed up and she has...
Right, we know it's the Prime Universe.
Okay.
That was, I think, like a specific sort of stipulation. And my understanding, because I was like, I wanted them to do that, but I thought that for sure that they would do the Abrams Trek just because that's where the money is right now.
Yeah.
But I believe my understanding is the Star Trek has so many... The franchise has so many more merchandising options with the Prime Universe, with all those different settings that... and I heard Todd McFarlane is going to make the toys, so they'll get some nice fancy sculpts.
By the way, but, imagine this: Todd McFarlane himself sculpting one by hand. Hey there, Todd McFarlane, creator, Spawn, hand sculptor of every single Star Trek figure. They're handcrafted.
but yeah, that means that you know, they'll have new ship lines and all of that stuff, and they would have that whether it was Abrams or not. But I guess this will allow them to, if it's successful, to kind of maybe resurrect older stuff and be like, oh, you know, in the same style as the new line of Discovery figures, as the classic, you know, Picard and Riker figures.
Okay.
But whatever the case, they expect them to probably exploit the license.
I would not mind having a Picard figure at some point.
Let's see, what else? We saw some very nice, some vistas and planetscapes. The Klingons is the
best. I was going to say, that was the one.
Klingons. I thought they looked cool. They looked very different.
Right.
But I'm okay with making them different.
And that's causing the continuity freaks, including my co-podcaster, to freak out. I think because Trek has kind of... I sort of get their point in the sense that I'm not a continuity freak. And I understand that they're doing a new show, they may want to visually change them.
Yep.
Star Trek has tried to make a point to, like, in the Deep Space Nine episode where they travel back in time to the Troubles Tribbles era.
They explain why the Klingons look that way.
Well, they explain it, but they also, they go back and they use the actual footage.
Right.
So it's like Kirk's, you know, the look of Kirk's era was not, in flashback, they didn't change it so it looked all modern, like a modern version of that or something like that. And so Trek, and for another thing, the Klingons that they designed for the movies and ever after on the shows, where it was a great design.
It's a good one. Yeah.
So, these guys, the new ones, still have the sort of sagittal crest, is that what they're calling it? The forehead crest thing. But their skin is more like ashen gray, felt like. They had sort of like wider flared nostrils. The interesting thing, they seem to be on a ship that there was some leaked stuff that Father and I talked about for the podcast that he found out about, where the ship they're on is called like a sarcophagus ship, has some kind of maybe weird ritual thing, and if you see what they're, look in the background, it has all what these look like, sort of like, almost like an ornate ship, you know, as if it was some kind of weird sarcophagus thing. Maybe they're transporting the revered body of one of their Klingon dignitaries or somebody from the past, or I don't know what. But
see, that's what I
thinking. Did wonder is, like, could they be actually some weird offshoot of Klingons?
That's what I was going to say. This could
for generations,
be
we've tended to this ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, they get to look cool and scary in their own way.
I'm all on board with that. I'm not a continuity freak about Star Trek, but I am a continuity freak about other stuff.
Right.
So I get it's not a thing that bothers me, but it's legit. And I understand where people. So that's kind of hoping for the spinoff, the offshoot kind of thing.
Right.
I thought it was a solid trailer, and I don't know if I'm curious enough to buy CBS All Access for it. I need to hear reviews first.
I think that's where
I know one thing they're doing is they're running the first episode on CBS, so everybody's going to be able to sample this for free, essentially.
Maybe. CBS isn't the easiest thing to get either.
Is it not?
No.
Well, can you simply not watch it when it comes on at CBS? Or
yeah, you can do that. I'm sorry, are there people who watch TV when shows are on? Is that a thing anymore?
Is there not a show that you watch live anymore?
No, there's not a single show I watch live. Why would I do that?
But you can record anything, right?
No, I don't have a TiVo.
Oh, okay.
I don't have... I cut the cord a while back. I have Hulu and all that stuff, and CBS is not on Hulu. So, it's...
But they will not be depriving people of it. It's going to be showing for free on CBS.
It'll also probably, my guess is, they will probably do the free episode on Amazon and iTunes and all that. They didn't do that. That is probably how I'll watch it.
I think they bumped the initial order from 13 to 15 episodes.
I saw that. That's sort of a sign of confidence.
And they're doing some sort of after show thing on it, which I don't know if it's just like the Walking Dead thing.
It is, and they do a lot of those after shows.
Yeah.
Talking Trek.
Let's see, I'm trying to figure out if there's anything else that's mentioned about the trailer. There's an alien on it who looked like he interesting in the sense that he could be sort of their Mr. Spock. We'll see. He looked kind of almost Mass Effect-y to me.
Yeah, I got a Draxy vibe off of him. Like he was a
Drax
from Guardians.
Oh,
where he was sort of the straight man, the big tough guy straight man type.
Right.
Also Worf, if you want to keep in universe.
I don't know much about these characters. He said that his like people like see death when it's coming, and he's like, and it is coming, or something dramatic like that. Yeah. But it was like some pretty serious makeup on it. Like I was I was sort of feeling sad for that actor because I bet every episode that's a rough one.
Yeah.
But that said, for us the viewers, it's a cool looking alien.
Yep.
What I really want to know is kind of more about like what the hook is, what they will be doing. Like, you know, are they just an exploration ship? I think they have what's his name? They've said that. it'll be a single season. Each season will have a main storyline. So that's going to be different for Trek, even though they've done arcs before, but I think this will probably be the most focused that they've ever been.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing about it? I don't know what the other thing was.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I thought it was a pretty good trailer. Nick, anything?
No, nothing to add. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I will watch the first episode.
I admit, if it's not good or if it's like mediocre but isn't going to take hold, I will be a little bit crushed. But
really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know I love Trek.
I know. But there's been so much disappointing Trek. You're not just used to that?
You know, this is, I think, its last shot. Yeah. I feel like if this, you know, Enterprise was already kind of a sort of a little bit of a whimper, and Enterprise had some good stuff in it, but it definitely didn't, you know, set the world on fire, and, you know, didn't, by all accounts, didn't really get good until its last season or two, or, like, really good. But, so I feel like they will probably let it lie if this doesn't take off.
Yeah, that's probably true.
At least for another 10, 15 years. You know, nowadays, almost anything could get a revival at any given moment.
Yeah, yeah.
What else we got?
Well, James Wan is producing the Resident Evil 6 movie reboot.
Right. At least that's what they're saying right now.
I respect the balls of trying it, to be honest. Yeah. I respect the ambition.
Does everybody know who like James Wan is now?
Yeah.
At this point,
like, so what are the big things he's done? He's done he's directed Insidious and
Conjuring.
And he's doing Aquaman.
Yep. Did you do second one as well?
Yep. He's doing Aquaman.
He's produced a lot of horror movies that have kind of been in that Insidious, Conjuring horror verse, or from. Was it Blumhouse Productions? He seems to be a producer.
I liked the first Resident Evil movie, the with Mia Jovovich.
It's the only one I've seen of them.
And Michelle Rodriguez.
I thought it was a bunch of. I didn't hate it, but I've never rewatched.
Sort of pulp. Yeah. Pulp fun.
I think they've exceedingly gotten worse and worse as time has gone on.
I sort of appreciated the audacity of them. Yeah. Like, didn't they apocalypse the world?
Oh, yeah, they did.
I've never seen the other ones, but I have friends who have put on sort of that B-movie level that they enjoy.
Right.
Well, yeah, our coworker Chris was saying that he has a big fondness for...
But rebooting it and sort of bringing like James Wan in to help maybe bring it more of a horror vibe to it, I think is a good call, and it's a good sort of shake up for the series, which I think has become a vehicle for action.
Right.
Well, you got to remember, Resident Evil. This is kind of like the superhero thing, the shared universe continuity movie series. When Resident Evil was first made, like, the closest thing we had was, like, Mortal Kombat and that kind of thing. So, there wasn't any room for anything like that.
Right.
So, to have a movie universe now where it's, like, they know going in that they can do a shared universe, that they can plan for longer stories, they don't have to, like, blow everything out in the first movie and then figure out what to do with the sequel. Like, they can plan longer term. That wasn't a thing that was happening that long ago.
Sure. Although... You mentioned shared universe, but I don't think, like, Resident Evil isn't, like, a particularly shared universe.
Well, not shared universe, but it is a series, in the same way, like, Fast and the Furious is a cinematic universe.
Right, right.
You know?
With kind of closely aligned continuity between them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think, incidentally, if this was, like, in the games, they jump around, they don't have, like, one main character in the Resident Evil games, they've always jumped around between different special ops guys from, like, the STARPS
it's like Chris unit Redfield
or whatever. Basically, they're special ops.
Yeah.
And occasionally just other randos and stuff. So they actually could do that if it was successful, is, you know, like, have some side character who's just like, I'm the janitor at the school where the T-virus was released or whatever. I'd watch that.
Yeah.
If the janitor was played by Samuel Jackson.
I would categorize myself as mildly curious.
Yeah, that's about where I am.
Netflix announced a Dark Crystal Age of Resistance, which is a prequel series to Dark Crystal.
Yep. I guess since there's so many notes and stuff I've gathered that they made just, like, intense world-building notes.
Yeah.
I think, like, all Dark Crystal stuff runs the risk of being kind of, like, sort of interesting, weird world building, but, like, who cares if you don't care about the characters?
Yeah.
Which is the struggle I always had with the original one, even though I kind of like it. But I kind of have some hope for it in a serial TV format. It's not just a movie, is it?
No, it's a serial TV, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that could be kind of what it needs.
Yeah.
To make me care about those damn Gelflings.
I have no fondness for Dark Crystal, so... But I'm happy for people who like Dark.
How do you feel about puppets?
They're all right.
It is presumably going to use the puppeteering and stuff.
I have no idea.
I would hope so.
Not going to be like a CG or
I feel like if experience. You get rid of that aspect of Dark Crystal, it kind of loses its...
It'd be like doing a CG Nightmare Before Christmas sequel or something like that. You'd be like, why? Why would you even... The charm was... Yeah.
You've killed it.
Yeah. Nick, what's your take on Dark Crystal?
I was never super into Dark Crystal, so, I mean, I'm neither here nor there. But I will watch it. I'll give it a shot.
The most interested I was in its potential was when who's the guy who did Samurai Jack?
Jenny Tartakovsky.
He was going to, at one point, do the sequel to Dark Crystal. It just never happened. He started doing his Hotel Transylvania and whatever other
but
stuff.
But he will do it in his animation style.
I'd probably That'd watch right. that.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Gelflings would be little badasses.
Yep.
And those, like, what are the big crab claw things? Those that are so horrific. Those would be just, like, brutes, just monsters.
Sure.
I'm interested to see how it's going, and I know that Dark Crystal does have a pretty strong cult fandom, so if they pull it off, it's interesting to see a cult fandom revived like that.
Yeah,
so it'll
be
kind of notable historically for other properties, you know. People will be like, when is Knight Rider going to get the Netflix treatment?
It has to be coming.
Oh, it's got to be, yeah.
I mean, Knight Rider seems
did a Knight Rider revival a few years back, and it was terrible.
Right,
Could it be any worse than the MacGyver series?
No, it can't be. We've just got a second season, by the way.
I think we live in a world where that attempted revival is kind of already forgotten. Mm. So they could, if they wanted, probably do that. And by the way, if I were doing a Knight Rider revival, I would go ahead and take into account all the continuity of the show with Carr and all of that stuff. Not worry about it particularly, but I would go ahead and set it in the 80s. I would make it a weird period piece. Because, I mean, the car's got to... I feel like the car shouldn't be a modern, cool, super cool car. It should be a car that was super cool in the 80s.
No, what it should be is that some freelance organization, like the spy organization, went bad.
Yeah.
And then some Michael Knight, who has long since been thought dead, recruits some kid to sort of take on the old organization he was part of.
Yeah.
He gets killed, and this kid is like forced to bring Kit out of mothballs, so he's using this old car
in the modern
world.
I like that.
Would Kid just be so ridiculously outmoded and it'd be like...
Or maybe this kid's like a genius mechanic.
My Bluetooth won't connect. Kit, what's wrong?
He puts Kit... He's the drive Kit in the pilot. At the end of the pilot, Kit gets crashed and he has to transplant Kit into a brand new fancy car.
That car could be called Crash, spelled with a K.
Crash.
And having a fancy new voice as well, because I don't know if that...
They lost that actor.
They lost that actor.
You know, you need to get somebody... It needs to be like... Jack Black or Billy Eichner. How about that?
I don't know who that is.
You would know. He's a yelly comedian.
God. Let's get God.
You know, the thing is, the original voice guy was sort of a somewhat known character actor, but he wasn't super well known. So
but
I
you
would
know
not...
they'd cast the dude. You know that's what it would be. It would be a noble name.
I would pray to God that they wouldn't.
Anyway,
good character actor.
Hollywood, call us.
I was going to say, if they were doing Randy's Crazy Plan, depending on how campy you wanted to allow it to be, you could bring in Hasselhoff as the mentor.
You need to.
Yeah. You have to. Yeah. I think you have to. Or you have Hasselhoff, that it's not Kit, that Michael Knight there was a serious car crash. He was put into the computer, and he is now the voice of Kit.
You can do that. With a digital money for nothing and chicks for free style.
And you know what it should be? It should be Knight. It should be Knight. That should be the name of the car.
It's not the worst idea.
Anyway.
They could tell his war stories and stuff.
And the kid should be called Squire.
All right.
What's next?
All right. Next up is the Black Lightning trailer. Which, did you watch this, Nick?
I did.
And Dave, you just saw it. We just watched it.
Yep, and I'd seen it
before.
I liked it.
I liked it too. I've kind of... I don't know, soured isn't the word, but I've lost interest in a lot of the CW shows. I'm way behind on all of them.
Except for iZombie,
but the DC ones.
But I
like this so far. I like the guy they've cast as the dad. I like both the daughters. I like the notion of a sort of retired hero having to go back and deal with the gangs. They're using the 100, which is cool.
Yep. I haven't read enough Black Lightning to know much about the 100. But
I thought they were generally a criminal conspiracy, and they're making it more of like a street gang.
Yeah. I sort of wish they were like a gang that uses high-tech stuff or something that set them apart. Here they just look like gangs.
I wish they all had nunchucks.
Okay. But my point was serious, though. That I wanted them to be slightly more superhero-y.
No, I get that. I get that. But I think they should love nunchucks and mohawks.
All right. I don't know where to go with your comment, Andy.
I'm just saying that that's what the gangs...
If it was supposed to be like the 80s, yes.
the 80s comics yes. were... I'm actually making a somewhat serious point, and that I think larger than life would be nice.
Right, right.
As opposed to these like actual like gangbangers.
Right, right.
And it's I would like a little larger than life.
Sort of that warrior style yeah. or something like that exactly. where it's, you're yes. just like, yeah, they have something about them that, yes. that makes them really different.
But I'm putting it in a goofy way, but I legitimately think...
Okay, I thought you were just making a dumb joke.
No, I mean, fair, but no. I'm making a dumb joke, but I have a serious point, which is, yes, I think larger than life would be nice, but... That's not always what they do on the CW anyway.
Right.
But where I had a... I thought I had a problem with it not being in the CW universe.
Yep.
So now I'm kind of like, well, now that I'm not really watching any of those, yeah. I can take a standalone.
I still think it's possible that then we'll get some kind of crossover.
I'm sure.
But I think what they wanted to do is they wanted to set this as sort of a street level kind of thing. And if you've got Supergirl and Flash out there... then it becomes more of a...
He's a little less special.
Yeah. And there's more of a implied, oh, but supervillains can show up at any time. And I think they want to make it a more grounded thing where it's yeah. like a supervillain.
Right, it's going to be personal.
Yeah.
It seemed like they made a point that he's not as indestructible as a lot of other superheroes. Even Flash, who can yeah. heal fast, kind right. of is... that he had to retire precisely because he was getting injured and like yeah. was in rough shape.
I think the outfit looks great.
The outfit looks cool.
And in the flashback, they show him in the old costume.
Yep. I hadn't noticed that, but that's cool. It looks like he's kind of doing a mixture of like kind of martial arts fighting with blasts and stuff like that. Yep. So yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. In other CW news, Supernatural is going to cross over with Scooby-Doo.
Which sounds insane.
Which we believe they're going to get animated.
I believe they are getting animated. So, which is not too outside the realm.
Do we presume that the idea will be that in-universe, in Supernatural,
yeah.
they will be some curse or something will draw them into a Scooby-Doo cartoon?
My guess is, you know, they've done any number of episodes where, like, where the guy who was Loki but turned out to be an angel, spoilers for season 5, like
he puts him into an alternate reality
kind of thing. Yeah, they've done this kind of thing before, so it'll probably be like some kind of curse.
Right.
But I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
Yeah.
Sam and Dean interacting with Scooby and the gang.
All of the stuff that they know versus all of the kind of cliches that the Scooby gang has been through. Yep. You know, at some point, you know, like Shaggy and Scooby, sometimes when they were being chased by a monster, they'd act like they were like hairdressers or something, and they sort of Bugs Bunny style, they'd be bamboozling the monster.
Yeah, sure.
And and then I feel like if that's happening with like a more creepy, like supernatural type monster, and they start putting their act on, would you do it for a Scooby snack and all that stuff? They can have a lot of fun with that stuff.
Well, and you know, I'm sure
he's got.
Sure, Scooby and Shaggy love pie. So,
and you know one of them's got to hit on like Daphne or Velma or like do the you know it's yeah. like actually Velma. Dean I always thought definitely. You were kind of the cuter of the two. And
yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Mace Windu is getting a comic series. It is drawn by legendary Dennis Cowan, which is cool.
Cowan, who he drew a ton of stuff for Marvel.
I don't think a lot of people know who he is anymore.
But he did a ton of stuff for Marvel in the 80s.
Yeah.
He notably worked on Icon, I think, yep. when the DC Milestone.
No, he worked on Hardware.
Hardware, yeah. He drew the Question mm-hmm. for DC.
Yep.
So he's a super talented guy.
Yep. The writer is Matt Owens, who was a writer on Luke Cage, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
His first comic is Elektra, which we're not super big fans of.
Yeah.
But it's cool that Mace Windu is getting his own book.
Yes. You know, Dennis Cowan as an artist, you know who he reminds me of a little bit is actually John Romita Jr.
I can see that.
He's got something of that. And a little bit of, like, there's honestly a little bit of Bill Sienkiewicz in there, too.
Yeah.
He's got some of those sort of bold, bigger, bolder characters. Yeah, but I pretty much always like looking at his stuff.
I just want to see Mace Windu be a badass.
Yeah?
Like he did in Tartakovsky's.
I have to say that I would be interested in that, but I also would like to see, honestly, find out more about what his deal is. He seems like kind of stoic and badass, but I wouldn't mind finding out more about, you know, who he is behind that, does Mace Windu do in his leisure time? What other Jedi does he hang out with or to talk with, you know, who are his friends?
He does not have friends.
I get the feeling he might not. Yeah,
I mean, but, in Clone Wars, I think it was he was very, you know, militaristic and kind of
not one of the more aggressive.
Yeah, not very nice.
Yeah, but that'd be interesting to see too.
Yeah, it would be.
A little bit of casting news. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who you might know from a little thing called Hamilton, is doing voice of Gizmo Duck on DuckTales. This is crazy. I'm super excited for a show I've had no nostalgic attachment to.
I mean, I watched DuckTales growing up, and
never seen an episode.
Really? It was fun.
But that damn theme song gets stuck in my head every time it's mentioned.
And Gizmo Duck is was a fun character, and the idea that Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to be voicing is insane.
Yeah. That's like that's the stunt casting you pray for when you're.
Yeah, that's
when
like getting Ian McKellen to voice Scrooge McDuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Randy, when we did karaoke, I did check their list to see if they had the DuckTales theme song out there. They did not. Okay. I feel sure that one of them has that out there because I feel like that is an awesome group sing-along
song.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm going to keep looking.
All right.
I'm not done with you yet, DuckTales.
Stay on your quest.
Not by a long shot.
All right. There's three more movie stories, and one of them is the one that you guys both posted, and I was very excited to talk about, and that is The Dark Universe. The shared universe of the Universal Monsters, which I think we've all been kind of a little skeptical of.
I thought it had kind of already started with that Dracula movie, but I guess that wasn't... I don't know if either they decided to write that one off.
I think it's the same way that the Incredible Hulk is technically in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But it's kind of like the Redheaded Stepchild.
Did either of you see the Dracula movie?
No.
It wasn't bad.
I heard multiple people say it was pretty decent.
Yeah, I actually watched it. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was amazing. But, I mean, I thought it was solid.
Yeah, no, I heard some interesting stuff about it. I actually do want to see it at some point. But the Mummy movie that's coming up is the kickoff, right?
Yes. So here's the deal.
Bride of Frankenstein will follow.
Yeah, in 2019.
They're pushing this super hard, they're pushing all the good people they get involved with it. Danny Elfman did the theme, and they're really pushing that. Bill Condon, the Academy Award winning Bill Condon, who I'm blanking on what he Gods and Monsters.
Oh, okay.
Which was about. The writer of Frankenstein?
Yep.
Was it Mary Shelley?
I think that's right, but I don't know
but
for sure.
He's directing Bride of Frankenstein, which is the next movie. Alex Kurtzman is the director and producer of The Mummy. Chris Morgan, who wrote Fate of the Furious, as well as five other Fast and Furious movies, is one of the producers.
And he does know how to handle those kind of franchises.
Yeah. Christopher McQuarrie from Mission Impossible, Usual Suspects, and David Koepp from War of the Worlds, Jurassic Park are all on board to help do some of the writing. And then they've got their cast.
The cast is amazing.
Like a group picture out of. So we already about Tom Cruise.
Sure.
Russell Crowe is going to be sort of their Samuel Jackson as Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde.
Yeah. Or Mr. Hyde.
No, Dr. Hyde.
Oh, is that...
Yeah, that's what I've seen.
Is he going to be Doctor?
I believe so.
Yeah, it seems like right from the get-go, they're kind of upending the expectations. I mean, like, first of all, this Mummy movie, far from being, you know, kind of what the lurking horror of the traditional Mummy, you know... although not the big Mummy adventure movies of the 90s,
right.
But it does look like it's going to be some sort of world-threatening sort of monster.
Her wanting to reform the world in her image.
Everything they built will fall.
Why would you do that?
No, get out. Get out now.
But they've cast Johnny Depp is going to play the Invisible Man, and Javier Bardem is going to play Frankenstein's monster.
Oh, wow. I guess I hadn't even seen all of those. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem as the monster?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Tom Cruise is Soldier of Fortune Nick Morton.
So we expect to probably see him around. Is that a monster?
And I wonder if he's something. We don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Here's the only gripe I have so far in this cast photo they released. That's a whole lot of white dudes.
Yeah.
It's all white dudes and one woman. And the woman is like the Mummy.
Javier Bardem has a Spanish heritage.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, there was, Nick, I think it was you who speculated, just based on one of those early Mummy trailers, that you see all those birds crash into that plane, and it looks like...
But I think they were birds. I thought they were bats.
But and we were like, oh, maybe Tom Cruise is a vampire.
I don't think that is after
watching...
But he
does somehow survive, weirdly. Like, there's a scene you see where him waking up on, like, a morgue table.
Well, I think that has something to do with
the
being
curse.
Chosen by the Mummy as sort of the person who resurrected
I wonder if, Yeah, I have this feeling he's probably going to emerge from this movie with some kind of supernatural destiny, or he's going to be a monster we haven't thought of yet, or something like that.
So,
What if he was Creature from Black Lagoon?
Well, I mean, their big Dark Universe,
The Dark Universe films are connected by a mysterious multinational organization known as Prodigium, led by the enigmatic and brilliant Dr. Henry Jekyll. Their mission is to track, study, and when necessary, destroy evil embodied in the form of monsters in our world. Working outside the aegis of any government and with practices concealed by millennia of secrecy, Prodigium protects the public from knowledge of the evil that exists just beyond the thin membrane of civilized society and will go to any length to contain it.
So it's the BPRD.
Yeah. This is a cool idea for a shared universe. Like,
yeah.
Right. It gets them. It's a little bit League of Extraordinary Gentlemen because they're kind of taking some famous characters from fiction.
Yeah. Yep.
But heavy on the revision, big action adventure variants of it.
Yeah.
I do kind of. There's a part of me that wishes that they could do these as like more full horror movies.
Yeah.
And still interconnect them. But it's hard to like do that and not lose the horror side of it.
Yeah.
I imagine. I'm hoping that they will still have creepy sequences in them.
I would imagine.
But it's probably going to be more like Supernatural, where you know the adventure is a big part of it.
Yeah.
It's clearly a big part of it.
I'm weirdly excited about all of this. I mean, it looks like this
they've
is
assembled,
like,
they've assembled a legit task force.
Have they said who's playing Bride of Frankenstein?
They have not said yet.
Okay.
And by the way, that's another straight out of the gate subversion as well, where you're beginning not presumably with the monster, but with the bride.
Yep.
Maybe, or is it going to be that like it's about the like the bride of Dr. Frankenstein?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
You know. We don't actually know. They could be any number. So I'm really curious. I generally have felt like people trying to copy the cinematic universe have flailed and not succeeded. I think this one's got me legitimately interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very curious about it. I did, you know, just from the trailers, I've had an interest in The Mummy from the beginning, but also some nervousness that it's just going to be kind of, you know, Tom Cruise running.
Yep.
I mean, admittedly, I most of the time like to see Tom Cruise running around.
Sure.
But sometimes he's doing that, and he's Jack Reacher, and it's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
He's always looking... I mean, apparently he just makes movies because he loves making movies. So I think he just...
Also, you know, he likes money.
You know what else I think he likes? Running.
And running. He loves running at night.
No, I heard on, like, a podcast with, like, Alec Baldwin, and he said working with Tom Cruise is exhausting just because he just constantly keeps moving, and...
And he won't stop talking about Scientology.
Well, there's that aspect, but we try not to look at that. But, yeah, I mean, The Mummy looks fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Knowing that, when I saw that clip that had Jekyll, that was, I think... shown just a few days before they did this big announcement, I was like, oh, Jekyll, that's cool. I didn't know they were doing that. And then they're like, oh, yeah, and not only that, but, like, the organization he's part of is the tie between all of the movies.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe is just Jekyll.
It's not a bad release of information on their part.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So there's two Tom-related stories. Tom Holland...
Mm-hmm.
A.K.A. Spider-Man,
yep.
has been cast as Nathan Drake in the lead in Uncharted.
Yep.
Which is weird, because he's like 12 years old.
It's going to be young Nathan Drake. I looked at the article.
It is a prequel.
It. And it is a prequel to his adventures.
Randy, did you ever play Uncharted 3?
I played a little bit of Uncharted, that's it.
Do you I don't know if you recall this, but it does actually flash back to when he was like, what did you say, 12, 10, 13?
12, somewhere around there.
Okay, all right.
And, so, and it shows, you play in a sequence where he first meets Sully.
Yep.
And
it's a great sequence.
It's a cool sequence. And presumably this then would be some years after that. You know, they probably have like sort of a partnership
or maybe
occasionally work together.
Yeah.
I can see it. It is a little bit weird because, you know, but I think they're like, hey, you know, if we dove right in with, you know, a 30-year-old Drake or whatever, then it's like, how can it not look like an Indiana Jones wannabe?
Yeah. What they should do is they should have Tom Holland should play the young Nathan Drake. And Nathan Fillion should just go ahead and play Nathan Drake. That's what all we want. That's what we all want.
At this point, I wouldn't.
No, I want Nathan.
Nathan Fillion is too much Nathan Fillion. He's honestly slightly kind of... His general presence is slightly dopier than Drake
is. I just want
is.
Nathan Fillion in the Marvel Universe as Simon Williams.
They should really run with
that. We do want that. Finally, Tom Hardy is playing Venom in a movie directed by Ruben Fletcher, who did Zombieland, for Sony... who are apparently doing their own shared Spider-Man universe that's not connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all.
Yeah, because they don't like money.
What the hell?
I didn't know this was... Wait, this is part of a connected universe?
The Homecoming is the
this
only one...
This is what
one
we heard about like a year ago or something, right? Didn't we like hear that possibility at least?
They've been trying for a long time. They won't do a Sinister
Let me just
Six
sort
movie.
Of just... would it be like, yeah, here's a Venom movie, and here's a Black Cat movie, yep. and here's yep. a
Silver Sable movie.
Silver Sable movie. Yeah. So you'd have some allies and some enemies.
Those are not for instances. Those are actually things they're trying to do.
And Spider-Man would be maybe in these movies or might a guest appear.
Yeah, I guess.
But they are not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe right. because Homecoming is the only one that falls under the contract.
Homecoming and Infinity War.
That's right. Homecoming and Infinity War.
But the weird thing is, like, why would Sony not get the help from, like, why would not draft off the Cinematic Universe marketing? That is the
this
craziest thing.
This might all completely change after Homecoming
yeah.
does.
Well, here's the weird thing. They're
tremendous
shooting
amount of money.
They're shooting for 2018.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Unless they start shooting yesterday.
I mean, I thought this sounded crazy when they were doing it. I'm like, this is never going to happen. And then they cast Tom Hardy and got Reflection. I'm like, those are real names. Like, they're serious about it.
In general, I saw a fair amount of positive reaction to this online. People have been wanting to see Venom.
Well, I mean, Tom Hardy's a good pick for Venom.
Yep.
I mean,
he was Bane, too.
He was Bane.
So he was on the Venom drug.
Yeah.
And I was playing Venom. Yeah. Is this the thread that he can only play things with Venom?
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah. Maybe he can play somebody from the Serpent Society next.
Yeah, he could play Puff Adder.
Puff Adder, yes.
Cottonmouth or Puff Adder.
Here's the thing. A Puff Adder movie is not ridiculous to me if we're going to do a Silver Sable movie. if we're in that world, Serpent Syndicate is no weirder than a Silver Sable
movie. How about a Count Nefarian movie?
Once you're seriously talking about doing a Silver Sable movie, all bets are off. And here's the thing.
Silver Sable's got a great
I love history. Silver Sable. The only reason I'm excited about this at all is if we get a Silver Sable movie, I'm willing to have a Venom movie to get there.
Let's have Emily Blunt play Silver Sable.
I actually like a Venom movie, even though I'm not a fan of him really as a solo character in any way, I actually feel like, done right, you could make it interesting. You could kind of do some of the things that the comics hadn't before. Tom Hardy's a pretty good internal actor.
Well, they should do some of the sort of body horror type stuff.
You could do body horror. You get very psychological with it as he's struggling like with these impulses. You could get it to, you know, Venom could be the symbol for the beast in all of us.
You know,
and it's a visually spectacular design.
I have a weird
design.
Question for you. Have they said that he is playing Eddie Brock or is he playing Venom?
I'm sure
because you could do the different voices for.
I imagine he's playing both.
Yeah, I think he's going to do Eddie Brock, and then they'll do a voice modulated version of Venom.
Here's the question: does Venom have any villains besides Carnage?
I honestly don't think he
toxin,
needs it. I think
bunch of like random symbiotes. That he was
I think they could have
for.
People with you know like. Osborn tech or you know any whatever they need to or if they just want to show that there's general heightened tech in the Spider-Verse because it's quasi part of the Marvel universe and
they can't use anything in the Marvel universe
though. I just mean that we'll see Spider-Man fighting guys that have fought the Vulture at that point and the Vulture clearly had like kind of crazy high tech. So, you know...
like with Roxxon and a bunch of other...
Right, they have other... And Goblin again.
Yes,
they can draft off of that for... This is how a lot of people have tech. And it could be like, oh, Osborn creatures are popping up all over the United States after, you know, his, fuel pump lines broke and he was found to be using, you know, toxic microbes.
Yeah. I don't know. These
are all very what-if-y...
I don't care at all about Venom.
Yeah, I don't care about Venom either. To me, he's a good Spider-Man villain.
Yeah, he's a good Spider-Man villain.
Use sparingly.
Yes.
Unless you call it Venom Lethal Protector, I'm kind of less interested.
But I think he will probably... That is basically, I suspect, what they're going to do is he sort of walks the line. I think he's going to be creepy and villainous, and they'll probably make him pretty scary when he's fully taken over, but... it's going to be a little bit like when Mr. Hyde gets repurposed in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen to help the good guys. You're going to get the...
This will be sort of
you're going to turn the monster to your side, and you'll be like, oh, I don't know if we wanted that.
Yeah. All right, that wraps up news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for Wednesday, May 24th, and... I think not a lot of new stuff in here, but some old favorites.
And I'm picking a number one.
That's true, you are picking a number one. Yeah. Why don't you start?
No, I don't want to. No, I can start. My pick is a licensed tie-in this week, but a good one. From Dark Horse Comics, we get Mass Effect Discovery, number one. Obviously, tying into the new Mass Effect games.
Yep.
This is a game, a comic with a cool... miniseries with a cool premise. the Andromeda Initiative, is that what they call it? Yep. Which is the central premise of the whole new game, which has, like, these big colony ships that are off to basically find a, what do they call it,
explore
a golden world. Is
the, the Andromeda system.
Yeah, explore and find a new alt-Earth in the Andromeda Galaxy. At that point, Earth is okay, but they're like, things could get dicey or whatever. Isn't this kind
they
of a general...
They seem to expand. There's a lot of population growth.
Yeah. And here you see that the I don't know if it's like the Turian Council, or basically their special ops group, which the Turians are known... Actually, I mix it up a little bit, because the Asari and the thing were known for, like, intelligence gathering.
Yeah.
And the Turians are, like, sort of, like, ultimate commandos.
Yeah, they're military.
Yeah, the Asari are, like, the James Bond-type spies, and the Turians are, like, the... more the Jack Ryan and the Navy SEAL type spot.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, everybody loved Garrus, the ultimate badass in the original few Mass Effects.
The Turians are all cops and soldiers.
Yep. And here you have a guy who's a member of one of their like special ops teams, who's there. In general, their intelligence is worried that the Andromeda Initiative might actually be a cover for, like, a military operation. Yep. That these could be... Those big colony ships could be, you know, warships, or could, you know, be intended to colonize without asking the, you know, the other side. So he's supposed to kind of infiltrate them and find out what he can, and if there's bad stuff going on, he's going to take them down hard. And he's a cool character. I don't actually remember his name as I'm flipping through this, because it's probably some crazy Turian name.
Yeah, but...
But he's a cool character, and I want to say this feels very Mass Effect-y, as he kind of infiltrates, you know, he goes onto the Citadel, which is where they're based, so you're going to see a lot of Mass Effect locations, and this artist does a lot of nice background work.
Three or four different aliens show up.
I was going to say, they get a really good, the artist does a really good rendering of all of
them. Yeah, it's like, that's an awesome looking, what is?
Solarian.
Solarian. There's a very cool Quarian I just came across, and they all look great. It's a cool little suspense story with some meat to it.
I've been kind of let down by a lot of the Mass Effect stories. I thought they were
same
okay.
Here.
And this is the first one I was like, oh, this is a
first
good
one that's
this,
kind of above average.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Yep. And I think because it is backed by some really nice art, I think pretty much anybody who's Mass Effect fan or who's been enjoying Andromeda should probably give it a shot.
Yeah, I agree. Nick?
I'm revisiting a pick from a couple weeks back, and that is Jean Grey number 2, which... I'm really, really enjoying the series more and more. It's sort of an exploration of young Jean Grey, who has this destiny set out before her, and she's kind of freaked out by it.
Does she actually feel like she has a destiny?
Well, that was sort of the end point of the first issue, where she has a sort of face-to-face with the Phoenix Force. Mm. And she
How is the Phoenix Force around?
It's just around. It's been used recently in Mighty Thor.
I thought it was definitively gone, though.
I know. That was the Avengers versus X-Men.
Right. So clearly there's something happening that we're like,
stuff
what's going
on? Phoenix, it rises again.
It's the very mystery.
Yeah. And basically it's all about sort of confronting that. And in order to sort of understand that, she visits all the people who have been sort of touched by the Phoenix Force. So,
right.
Like Colossus...
what were they? The people who got empowered by it during X-Men versus
that, and sort of
Avengers.
Rachel Summers, who has a connection to it.
Right.
Quentin Quire, who has a connection to it. Hope Summers, who has a connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get sort of this piece of her visiting all these people in interesting ways. And
that sounds cool. I sort of like sometimes that structure, the tour structure or interview structure, where... You know, once you get the premise, you know, it's just a kind of matter of, like, how is this going to play out with each person?
And it's sort of, this issue specifically gets kind of interesting when she finds Hope, who honestly is a character that I've never really warmed to. She's in it.
Right.
She
was interesting as a plot catalyst, but as a character, it was hard. She hadn't set herself apart from
it. I feel like Dennis Hopeless has got a really interesting viewpoint with her because... You know, she was just born in this small town, I think it was in Alaska, and during Messiah War, and Cable sort of took her into the future and became her father, essentially. And it's interesting to see Hope with a lot of characteristics of Cable, so she's very militaristic and kind of the planner.
Okay, makes
sense. And the way they sort of deal with that and show that is in a small town that has been sort of overtaken by Reavers. And it's just a fun concept that sort of allows all these group of people to get together and kind of become friends and, you know, fight with you side by side. So it's just a cool concept.
Is Jean, like, recruiting them, sort of, or calling them together? Because they are all at some point...
They came to her aid, essentially.
Okay.
Nick, I have an important question.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Reavers.
Yes.
Is there a guy with tank treads?
Wow. I don't know if there is one with tank treads. I feel like that's a missed opportunity now that you mention it. There are a bunch of,
I feel like they probably saved themselves from the past by not including that one.
Oh. There is one that has, instead of legs, he doesn't have a full tank tread, but he has legs that are tank tread-esque.
All right, I'll take it.
So, give that up to Victor Ibanez, who's just a fantastic artist.
Yep. This is the guy who's been drawing it from the beginning and who did Storm.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely a new talent to watch. But
I feel like with all of books that Dennis Hopeless writes, he brings some craft to it, and this is no different. Jean Grey is great.
My pick is another book I've picked most of the issues. I'm all Image Horror this week. I picked Rat Queens number 3, which is... introduces another group. One of the things I love about Rat Queens is it feels like D&D. And so they introduce... the cliffhanger of issue 2 involved Hannah accidentally raising a bunch of the dead in a graveyard because when they get drunk, they try to get her to raise the dead, and it worked this time.
That sounds like what would happen in D&D.
And so this adventuring group shows up to take down all this wandering dead, and they have a bard. And their bard sings, sings a song, and they go out and they stomp on the undead. But the way they do D&D stuff, like their bard's like magic ability is really cool. This group turns out to be sort of a cult hunting group. They're like they hunt for illegal cults and necromancers and shut them down. And so now they're at odds with the Rat Queens. The Rat Queens are also dealing with another adventuring group that is a her brother's adventuring group. It's like a male version of the Rat Queens, and they're all fighting for, you know, jobs and that kind of thing. And in amongst all this stuff, they are finding another job and need to pay their rent. There's some stuff with Hannah's dad and some weird necromantic stuff going on. And there's a centaur joke that killed me. It's the Rat Queens. If you know what it is at this point, it's doing what it does very well, which is being rowdy, adventurous, funny D&D.
I feel like Rat Queens always seems to deliver a lot in an issue because you're generally going to get like a lot of really funny, raunchy humor stuff. You're going to usually get some pretty good character development snuck in somewhere, sometimes more or less. And sometimes is there even some serious stuff. Is there any serious stuff in this one, Randy?
Not really. There's some references to sort of Hannah's backstory and that kind of thing, but it's a pretty light issue.
But yeah, they do have like some ongoing mysteries and things like that, too.
And for the hetero ladies and the gay dudes, there's a 3-issue story in which the scantily clad 4 Daves play volleyball.
3-page, you probably mean, probably not 3 issues.
Three-page.
But they get their own sexy Top Gun scene, basically.
Yes, they all play volleyball while the Rat Queens watch.
Nice. That's hilarious.
Which cracked me up. My backup pick is another Image book. This is Donny Cates' Redneck with artist Lissandro Estherin. This is the basically East Texas vampire family. Last issue, there was sort of a tragedy. As the vampires and the humans that they coexist with are sort of starting to start having stresses again. It has their two familiars, the humans they use in the daylight, going out and doing their sort of dirty work for them, and tensions rising as their this religious group that they've been sort of in a cold war with, it seems to be heating up. It's all sort of family drama and good old boy stuff filtered through vampire sensibilities. It's interesting stuff.
I loved the familiars. I thought they were really interesting.
Yep. Yep.
And one of them is particularly scary.
Yeah, his name is Evil, and he's all tattooed and laconic and wears shades and feels like a Garth Ennis character.
But I feel where I enjoyed the first issue. Mm-hmm. This is sort of the same pattern that I've seen with a lot of Image books. Yep. The second issue is better. And
also, importantly, Redneck is an ongoing.
Yeah.
He talks in the back about it. He just turned into issue 14. So Redneck, unlike God Country that's going to wrap up a little too soon for me, Redneck is his ongoing book.
Nice.
So I really dug it. I think people should give that one a read. And we do have the first or second printing of number 1 is back in this week.
Yep.
There's been a lot of speculation around Donny Cates' book for whatever reason. So if you want one, probably give us a call and have us hold one aside for you because they've been selling out every time you went to new printings. Dave, what is your backup?
My backup is a graphic novel. Very nice hardcover, The DC Universe by Mike Mignola. This is it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like, a compilation, as they occasionally do, of a ton of art stories, all of them drawn by Mike Mignola.
Yep.
So it's this, there are some here, by the way, that I have not read before, and I thought I had all his stuff, but maybe not. Among the ones I remember, some of these going back all the way to the 80s,
mm-hmm.
there's a Phantom Stranger miniseries that came out, I'm gonna say late 80s, that he drew, The World of Krypton, which was the Superman's Force U miniseries that John Byrne did that kind of showed you Krypton's history from that era.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the first time he probably got to do his designer skills, which, you know, obviously are all over Hellboy, but also you can see it in the movie Atlantis, oddly enough, that Iron Wolf thing he did with Howard Chaykin later.
Yep.
He does like to do design stuff, you know, even his Fafford and the Grey Mauser very clearly had a lot of thought put into all the background and everything. And so this is probably, I feel like that World of Krypton was probably the first place you got to do that. Also in here is some Superman stories, some stuff from Legends of the Dark Knight, which I don't know if I've got whatever that is, and Swamp Thing, another one I don't quite remember. Looking at the people who are involved in it, as the writers on these, because at that point he wasn't really writing for most of his DC stuff.
Right.
I think he was primarily the artist.
Right.
But you got Neil Gaiman, John Byrne, Jerry Ordway, George Perez, Kurt Swan, Paul Kupperberg. I don't know if these... these are not all. Some of those guys are artists or artist writers, and I don't know that what the workload, how it was split between all of them. The Neil Gaiman stuff is what I can't remember. Do you know if that's?
I don't know.
Maybe
I
that's
have no
the
idea.
Maybe he did like an issue of Swamp Thing and.
That is possible, actually.
That feels like the kind of thing he could have done an issue or two of.
Yeah.
There's a cool picture of Dead Man on the back of this by Mignola, and that's another one where I'm not sure where it's from. So I feel like maybe I have 3/4 of this or a little bit more than half I know, but there's a fair amount I don't. And essentially, if you're a Mike Mignola fan, you know it by now. You probably have a bunch of his Hellboy stuff and maybe his others. But just seeing him draw iconic characters and see him present his specific style is a really cool thing. And so you Mignola fans, just pick it up. Nick, what you got?
My backup pick is Captain America Steve Rogers, number 17. I'm sort of just enjoying the Secret Empire storyline and the craft and just sort of the story beats that we've seen so far. So I was excited to get another sort of sub-chapter of the series.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And this one really didn't disappoint. It's dark.
How close is this to, like, is this immediately following events that are going on?
Yes.
It specifically follows Secret Empire number 2.
Yes. And I think what I liked more about this issue is that it's world-building.
Yeah.
Because basically it is all about Steve Rogers sitting down, giving an interview with a journalist who, if you've read any of the previous events, you'll probably recognize. Her name is Sally Floyd. She first showed up during Civil War.
She's kind of been a recurring, the common point of view.
She was in the front line.
Her show is Front Line, and they did Civil War Front Line. They did Secret Invasion, maybe?
I think they did.
They for a long time, there was a... I feel like there's almost a sort of a subverting nod here to the front, like, that there will not be a Front Line series for Secret War, for Secret Empire.
Right.
The fact that she's appearing in this.
Yeah.
But, like I said, it's all sort of taking just that interview and her asking questions to Steve Rogers and him kind of bluntly
putting on his PR face, actually, and trying to sort of contextualize Hydra as, no, we're not the bad guys. That's all. It very much feels like sort of Trump fake newsy type stuff. In that it is like, it's like Cap putting the PR face on.
Right, it is. But like I said a little bit before about world building, there's a lot in here that dealing with sort of the way this world treats Inhumans and X-Men.
Yeah.
And I thought those were both very interesting point of views to see that we haven't seen in the main series.
Yeah.
Especially
I always jokingly do the, what are those point of views and things like that, but Can you say well, that? I mean, that actually sounds interesting.
Well, the Inhumans
are they more or less persecuted?
Well, no, more. The Inhumans are basically gathered up and put into prison,
like detention camps.
Yeah,
or something
detention
like that.
Camps and things like
so
that.
So they're like, yeah, we've taken care of that problem.
Well, Spencer's doing a lot of things, but subtlety is not one of them.
And the reasoning for this is apparently they are weapons created by the Kree because they are.
That was the logic that
that's
they
the logic,
right?
Which is
we know that
which,
that's not really the case.
Correct.
But if you twisted your brain hard enough, you could look
yes.
at the, you could get to that perspective.
And the way that the mutants are dealt with is interesting. I found it to be quite a nice little. I wouldn't say nice, but it's an interesting way of doing it.
Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a very good issue and.
It feels like the Cap Steve Rogers is definitely sort of very much the companion piece of Secret Empire. Like,
yes.
You don't need to be reading everything, but if you're enjoying Secret Empire, Cap is probably the series to be following as well.
That yep. makes sense.
But yeah, no, I've been enjoying it and look forward to it as this event continues.
What else is on your stack, Nick?
I really enjoyed the second issue of All New Guardians of the Galaxy.
Very heisty.
Very heisty. Continue sort of the feel of the movies. Then a long-forgotten, well, not long-forgotten, but a Jonathan Hickman series called The Dying of the Dead sees its sort of initial trade release, which
is like three issues, right?
Three issues,
like
but...
Trade.
Well, the first issue was almost like three issues worth
yeah.
of material, so it's a pretty good size, and then issue four hits, and this is going to be sort of a finite series. I think it only has 10 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really enjoying that. Venom number 150, which...
Is that an issue leap? A number,
yeah, they're going back to the,
they're going back
right,
to the original
right.
numbering and adding things together to get that number.
Right. It works if you look at it hard enough.
Yes, exactly. But this sort of sees Eddie Brock as Venom again, and...
Is that the Ghost Rider artist?
Yes, it's actually Trad Moore, which I thought was
okay.
an interesting
oh, yeah,
choice.
That's kind of fun.
And worked really, really well for the main story. There's a couple of backups. There's a backup story by Randy's favorite artist, Gerardo Sandoval.
Mm-hmm.
and then there's a reprint of an old Venom story as well.
And I believe a Venom cover gallery of some
yes.
sort in there. But that's good. I like that. I appreciate that 150th issue gets some kind of get some fancy stuff in it.
Exactly. Then there is a prestige format James Bond book called Service that comes out.
Was that a one shot?
Just a one shot written by Kieran Gillen of Wicked and Divine.
Oh,
and,
that's the notable thing about it. Yeah.
And art by Antonio Fuso, who did the art in G.I. Joe Cobra.
Yep.
And this sort of is just a one shot about. You know, the government that James Bond works for and sort of the people who may...
I didn't get to finish reading it, but it looked like they'd gotten... That the U.S. government was kind of shutting out MI6
yes,
or MI5 or whatever.
MI5.
And sort of like, well, frankly, we don't need... They're not as much value to us anymore.
Exactly. And there's other things going on as well, but it's a fun little one-off.
It felt like the honor was at stake of British intelligence.
But Kieran Gillen writes a pretty good James Bond,
okay.
so I was pleased with that. The... New series I Am Groot begins. Detective Comics starts up a new storyline focusing on Spoiler.
Cool.
X-Men Blue, the fourth issue hits featuring a pretty notable character and sort of a more turn of events for the team. And then I think I have one more. Infamous Iron Man number 8. Which focuses on infamous Victor Von Doom fighting against the evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe.
So good guy Doom versus evil guy Reed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But that is all that I have in my stack, Dave.
That's actually a fairly clever premise,
it is.
I have to admit.
It is.
Let's see. I've got a few other odds and ends. There's a one-shot, another. They've been doing these various Archie one-shot special. This one is The Archies. That is the band that Archie forms
yep.
is in there. 7 to Eternity, issue number 6. I didn't actually have time to read that today. I'm going to do a little catch-up, I think, and since it's kind of got a deep fantasy story mythology going on, I want to kind of sit down and take my time to read that, but it is out. The latest issue of Rebels was another good one. Let's see, the... this is Brian Wood Rebels, again, not the Luke Skywalker Rebels, but the guy in the Revolutionary War.
Sure.
Let's see. There's, and lastly, I wanted to mention a manga that came out that I think, Randy, you had first mentioned to us, and this is maybe more of an up your alley, called Delicious in Dungeon, that is about a group of desperate adventurers who take to eating the monsters that they deal with in the dungeon to survive. Yep.
It sounds like a mix of Dungeon Delving and Iron Watch Jan.
Yes. They have, they like show the recipes. They're, you know, in the true manga style. There is a sense of like they kill as what would be the equivalent of a myconid, a mushroom man early on, and somebody's explaining it's like, well, the first outer 3 inches are not really edible, but you know, below that it's got a good, you know, hearty flavor. He's like, the legs are always good. And like, it's a little horrific, but they also break it down like to the point where you actually see like all of the ingredients that they put into it and stuff like that. It's a lighthearted book with it, which also spoofs D&D and D&D tropes a little bit.
Yep.
And when I say spoofs, it's not a hard spoof like a satire, you know, or anything like that. But there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek fun with it as far as referencing D&D. So, you know, if that alchemy sounds good to you, definitely check it out. It's a good, weird book.
I have Ninjak Shadow Man Rapture number 1, which is a crossover between Ninjak and Shadow Man. Art by Kafu, which is really cool. Basically, this is a team of Valiant's sort of spies and mystics need to go into the Dead Side, which is their sort of underworld, to deal with a threat, and it's really pretty cool sort of adventure-y supernatural stuff. Saucer State number 1, which is the return of a little-known Vertigo series that featured a governor of New Mexico who had been abducted by aliens. It was sort of a mix of alien abduction stuff and politics. Well, now she's been elected president, and she's looking into the conspiracy that these aliens are everywhere. And it's got real, it's art by Ryan Kelly. It's interesting. Scarlet Spider number 2, which is more of sort of the sociopathic Ben Reilly in Las Vegas. It's a weird take, but I'm kind of enjoying it. Black Hammer number 9 is a focus on Colonel Weird, their sort of Adam Strange type guy, which has guest art by David Rubin, who was the guy who worked on Battling Boy spinoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And also does the book Ether for Dark Horse. Old Guard number 4, can you just be Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez as Immortals in Combat, which is really good. Exo Man War number 3 is more of their sort of high concept sci-fi, with Exo being a rebel leader who's sort of moving up the ranks. I've been really enjoying that book. And then Batman Shadow number 2 is more weird Batman versus the Shadow stuff. And finally, there's a couple trades this week I want to mention. There is the Moon Knight Volume 2 and the Jeff Lemire stuff, which I really liked this. This had some of the weird stuff where it's like Francisco Francavilla and Wilfredo Torres and James Stokoe, and there's like a...
They were each doing their own sequence in it, right?
Yeah, there's Moon Knight is like a fighter pilot on the moon versus werewolves, like some crazy stuff in there. But it's really good. And then a strange reprint, Batman New Gotham Volume 1 by Greg Rucka and Sean Martinbro. This was actually Rucka's first main foray into DC after the No Man's Land.
Right.
This was post No Man's Land Batman. They were trying to put together Gotham again, and this was Rucka sort of doing his Detective Comics run, where it was focusing on the cops, there's a lot of Montoya stuff, and some new villains, and it's got a very stylized art that I'm still not sure if I like or dislike, but it's very striking.
There's elements of, like, that Sin City thing, the way Sin City uses limited color palette in the movies and the comics.
Yeah.
It's not as black and white as that, but it does use just stark, you know, colors against some black and white stuff. Randy, do we think they're reprinting it for any particular reason? Like, there's some character in that who's about to return?
No, I think they're just probably putting it back in print because it's Greg Rucka stuff. And it's
right, good. And definitely, you know, Rucka's been doing stuff for DC again with Wonder Woman and others.
Yeah. And that is it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.